is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
This is Kip Ione, head men's basketball coach at Willamette University, founder of Teams of Men, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are jumping on to talk some post-NBA draft, upcoming NBA free agency, a couple of trades that maybe have already happened and some trades that may potentially happen. Who knows? It always feels like there's a lot of speculation and then maybe not quite as much activity on the trade front, but we shall see, Jay.
We shall see. All right, Mike. So I started off once again last week. I said I was going to save some of these tweets and I've got some more for us tonight. Okay. And we can see, we can see if you believe them or not, or we'll talk about this. So here's the first one. This one, you have to guess the player. An undrafted player who averaged 5 points but made five All-NBA teams, four All-Star teams, won a championship, four Defensive Players of the Year, three top 10 MVP finishes, and made the Hall of Fame.
This is an undrafted player?
Undrafted. Averaged 5 points a game, but made five All-NBA teams.
5 points a game for their career?
Yes.
Ben Wallace?
There you go. Good job. I'm proud of you,
Mike. All right. That one was pretty easy.
Okay. Okay, this one's a true or false, Mike.
Okay.
Andrew Wiggins has more career points than Kawhi Leonard.
Whew. Well, I mean, Wiggins averaged 20-plus in, I think, he might have been just under for a season or two in Minnesota, but he was right at 20 or above. Now he's been in Golden State. I mean, I would say the answer, Kawhi hasn't played for years, and he only had a couple years at his very peak maximum. I would say it's true, but probably barely.
It's true. It is true. I don't have the number. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I've read by multiple people saying, I think it's like by –
I would guess they're probably pretty close.
Okay, yeah, they're close. So, all right. More Ben Wallace. I meant to include this before. He has two triple-doubles, Mike. Two triple-doubles. But never had a game with more than 8 assists.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's crazy. Blocks, so, that points, blocks, so two, and that's crazy.
I don't necessarily think of Ben Wallace as being a shot blocker, but I know he was, but I don't necessarily. When I think about Ben Wallace is just like the physicality and the rebounding.
He has more blocks in his career than fouls.
That's pretty good. When you start thinking about that, you start. I mean, obviously, anytime you think about somebody who's an impactful defender that doesn't foul, I always think of Wilt,
who
never fouled out of a game.
Ben Wallace, more steals than turnovers.
Well, he never has the ball in his hands, so It's hard to turn it over when you don't have the ball.
His career high in rebounds was 28 points. His career high in points was 23.
Yeah.
That's crazy. All right.
Interesting career. Interesting career for him.
Okay. John Stockton. This blows my mind. John Stockton played 19 seasons. He played every possible game in 17 of his 19 seasons. Okay. All 82 in 16 years and all 50 in the lockout shortened season. Another year, he missed 4 games and then he missed 18 games in another season. He missed 22 games in 19 years and they were all in 2 seasons.
Different era. How about that? Yeah. How about if we just leave it there? It's a different era. There was no John Stockton was not load managing.
Okay, and this one's almost impossible. But I'm going to give it to you and see if you can come out with it. This is the first player in NBA history to have a 50-50-100 season. 50% from the field, 50% from the three, and 100% from the line. They had to have at least a minimum of 100 attempts between the three things in order to reach this. This is the same player, and this is my hint. It's the same player that famously played 28 minutes in the game and had zeros across the board on the stat line.
I feel like I should know this.
You should
from that last part. So, who are the who's a disappearing out on the court all star?
This guy's never been an all star, Mike.
No, I mean, but I'm saying a guy who, hey, I forgot he was out there, because it's got to be one of those guys. I don't know. I could sit here for a while.
He did it for the Atlanta Hawks.
No one wants to listen to that.
Tony Snell. Did it for the Atlanta.
Tony Snell. There you go.
That's a good one.
I've heard that before, but that's a good one.
Okay, and the last one. Who is the best plus minus in a game 7 in NBA history? Did it for the Dallas Mavericks. Plus 44.
Well, I'm guessing, was that somebody against the Phoenix Suns?
Could have possibly been. I'll see if I can.
Luka?
No.
Dorian Finney-Smith?
Well, that's more of the kind of player that you're looking at here.
Dwight Powell?
No, he's got some funky hair.
Oh, that's Reggie Bullock.
There you go. Got it.
All right.
Good job. Okay. Fuck here. So there you go. Those are my fun facts for you tonight, Mike.
All right. That's pretty good. Those are some good ones.
Yeah, I've got some more. So we don't know what the next episode is going to look like because I'm going to be out of town. But we'll see. We'll see when the next ones come up, Mike. Okay. So we're going to start, Mike. We're going to start with a trade yesterday. And then we're going to talk a little about speculation about things and what's possibly going to happen. So John Collins got traded to the Utah Jazz for Rudy Gay. Rudy Gay always comes up in trade talks. John Collins always comes up in trade talks. I feel like Rudy Gay, Mike, has been in the league for like 15 years. And I don't know that there's been a season that he hasn't been brought up in a trade talk. Do you agree with that statement?
He's definitely a guy that when you think about, hey, who are we going to throw into a trade as filler or as a guy that can help us to match salaries? Yeah, Rudy Gay kind of comes to mind. He's had another guy that's had kind of an interesting career. He obviously came into the league with the idea that he could be a star. I mean, that was, I think, coming out of Connecticut. That's what people thought that he could potentially be. And he just has never kind of gotten to that level. But he's been a useful player in different places that he's gone. But to your point, this trade from Atlanta's perspective is just a salary dump to get them underneath the they're just trying to get underneath the cap and underneath the looming second apron of this new collective bargaining agreement. So it's not a player for player trade in a sense of Atlanta was trying to replace John Collins' value. It's more a case of they're just trying to dump that salary.
Yeah. You know, obviously, My question to you, Mike, is does Rudy Gay suit up for the Hawks this year, or is he gonna be like waived? Do you think?
I could see him suiting up. I mean, why not, right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously.
I mean, I don't know what his, off the top of my head, I don't know what his salary is, but it doesn't seem like his salary would be something that would be overly burdensome. So I'm looking to see if I can find it here. I don't know. It does.
Let's see if my internet. $10 million, Rudy Gay.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, he probably plays. I mean, Rudy Gay is a helpful veteran that could play spot minutes off the bench. And I guess if somebody gets hurt, he could step up and play some more minutes. I think the more interesting question is obviously what did the Jazz do with John Collins? How does he benefit Utah? I mean, now when you look at what Utah has, right, you're going to go with Walker Kessler at center. You've got Markkanen playing the
power forward
four, I guess. And then you got Collins at the four, Markkanen at the three, however you want to mix and match them. So that's a pretty big, long lineup. I mean, Collins hasn't shot the ball well since he hurt his hand a year or two ago. And so he's never been the same level of shooter that he was prior to that. But I will say the one thing that I keep coming back to with John Collins is the year when they went to the conference finals, he was really good and kind of embraced his role as sort of a rich man's garbage man, for lack of a better way of saying it. He did all the dirty work that that team needed, which wasn't a thing that I don't think going into that playoff run, many people thought that that was the kind of player that John Collins would or could be. And so, look, I don't know, is Utah ready to try to start winning? I mean, they've accumulated lots of draft capital from other teams.
They backed into winning this year for most of the season.
Right. Right. But I mean, are they actively now going to be trying to win games, or because they've, because they've accumulated so much draft capital from the Cavs and the Timberwolves that it doesn't matter if they're good or not because they're getting the draft picks. Their own draft picks aren't necessarily what they're going to build around. They have all these other picks from other teams. So
yeah,
maybe he's trying to start winning. I mean, Kessler exceeded expectations last year. Obviously, Markkanen exceeded expectations from when they traded Donovan Mitchell to the Cavs for him. So I think their timeline sort of got accelerated. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see exactly what Utah does in terms of the rest of their summer when it comes to team building. Will they be a team that's going to do some more things to try to add to what they already have and try to clearly go for winning games? Or are they going to go the other way? I don't know. This seems like a move that you're trying to win games.
Winhurst is the way I take this. Taylor Horton Tucker is opting into his $11 million deal with the Utah Jazz for next season. So they've got him on the books too. He literally just tweeted that like half an hour ago. So,
yeah, certainly. I mean, yeah. I mean, from their standpoint, I mean, yeah. Harden Tucker picks that up. Whatever. I mean, Utah. You just don't know which direction they're going to go. I think that I like that front line. I mean, you got Kessler who blocks a ton of shots, and obviously Markkanen had a breakout year last year. So Collins is still young, and I think he's only 25 actually right now. So he's going to have an opportunity to grow with that team as they continue to build. So I guess for Utah, right, it's just a matter of figuring out what's our timeline.
Yeah.
To me, that's what it comes down to in Utah. And I guess you get Collins for almost next to nothing. I mean, Rudy Gay is a guy that maybe plays at the back end of your rotation, and Why not take a flyer on Collins, give him a different environment, and maybe he blossoms into the kind of guy that, you know, you think that he can, you know, that he can contribute to a winning team. Because I think we saw him do it. Like I said, we saw him do it in a playoff run with the Hawks. So, you know, if Utah gets to that point, Collins, I think this to me is a low risk acquisition because I think there's a floor with Collins of what you're going to get.
I agree. I think, listen, I think this move says we're going to try to win now. We're going to try to win. I mean, Rudy Gay wasn't going to be doing it for you, but John Collins, if you get the John Collins that helped the Hawks have a great playoff run, then it gives you a chance. Now, do I think the Utah Jazz are a legitimate threat in the West? A lot of the teams that are currently constructed before free agency starts, not really. But can they be a 4, 5, 6 seed? I think so. I mean, we have to see how everything else shakes out. So, but I think this is definitely puts them into we're trying to win now. Like, they're not sitting
in. Let me ask you this. Can I ask you this?
Yeah.
So this year we had maybe not as many teams tanking as hard as we thought they would, but we certainly went into the season thinking there were some teams that were going to be tanking, and then there clearly were some teams that tanked down the stretch. But if you look at kind of what's happened since then, I think which teams are going to be tanking if you go into this season. So if you look at the Eastern Conference, the Wizards are going to be tanking. Orlando, are they tanking anymore? I'm not sure they really tanked last year, to be honest with you, right?
I mean, they just don't have
enough. They're young, but I don't think they're
Hollow and Fultz, right, Mike?
Yeah, there you go. Well, now they drafted Anthony Black. So a lot of the post draft conversation was that Orlando drafted Anthony Black, who, look, I haven't watched much, if any, Anthony Black at Arkansas, but everything that I read is that he's kind of got a suspect jumper, but a good feel for the game, kind of basically Markelle Fultz. So who knows? Who knows what Orlando ends up doing with?
I think Chicago might be in the, like, if they fire sale, like, there's been rumors of
maybe, but I don't think they're going to, though. I don't know. Is there a market for any of those three guys?
I think DeRozan has a market.
Not in the summer, though. DeRozan
he'll be a January situation.
Yeah, he feels like a midseason trade. And I don't know, that I've read,
LaVine was like New York, maybe, but like
LaVine just seems like a guy that's going to be hard to move. High salary, has never really won big, has injury history.
He had a good dunk contest.
That seems to me. Yeah. Well, I think LaVine's contract is hard to move. He's a guy that maybe you get out of it at the end of that contract, but I think you're pretty much stuck with him.
Listen, we've seen other guys with hard contracts get moved, Mike.
I know. I don't think there's a huge market for LaVine.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say they can't move him. And it sounds like, from what I've read, that Vucevic is going to re-sign with Chicago for some type of semi-reasonable amount of money. So I think Chicago is more kind of in, like, let's run it back to mediocrity as opposed to being a team that's full-on
tanking.
I think Wizards are clearly tanking. I think Indiana is no longer – I don't think you put them in the tanking category. They didn't really tank last year. No. Charlotte's
in an interesting situation.
I think they have to win. I think you have to try to win now if you get LaMelo back healthy and now you have Brandon Miller. I think you want to get in a situation where you want to be able to keep those guys, especially LaMelo. You want to be able to keep them happy and say, hey, we have a plan. We're going to try to win. And then Detroit, I think the same thing, right? I think Detroit, you pick up, which one of the Thompson twins did they get? Ausar, right? I think they got Ausar.
Sure.
Because that man went to Houston, sure. Yeah. So I think if Cade comes back, Detroit now is out of tank mode. I think they're going to start winning.
I have to say, Mike, I was at Cedar Point yesterday, and I saw someone wearing a Detroit Pistons jersey, and I just said, I'm so sorry.
There you go. Hey, look, Detroit has, at the very least, now look, it was tempered this year, and I know they only won 17 games, but the centerpiece of their rebuild is Cade Cunningham, and he was out the whole season. So if Cunningham comes back and he's at full strength, now you have Duren, you have Ivy, you have the Thompson twin. You have some pieces there that can grow together. You're still not going to win a lot because you're so young, but I think those are four guys that around the league.
They have a new coach now?
Yeah.
So
four – Did they hire Charles Lee, right? Yeah. Is that who they hired?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if you're Detroit, you have four pretty intriguing young pieces that I think would have a lot of value around the league. I think those guys are thought of pretty highly, at least at this point, by other teams. And just when you look at their reputation around the league, I think all four of those guys, when you talk Cunningham, Duren, Ivy, and Thompson, those are four guys that just about any team would like to have on their team. So that's a pretty good starting point. So in the East, I think really, to be honest, the only team that I would say is really hard tanking is the Wizards. And to be honest, right? They get Tyus Jones, and they got Monty Morris. Right. So they got
some, tanking. Get out of here.
Look, I know they're tanking, but I'm saying they have the potential of having like a semi competent team. They could go. I mean, clearly, with this new regime, I think they're going to tank, but they do have some competent players that.
Okay.
If they wanted to go the other direction, which hopefully they don't. So anyway, all right. So Washington, to me, Washington's the only team in the East that's clearly going to the season with the plan to be bad. I think those other teams are looking to try to fight their way up towards the play-in.
Okay, would you agree with that?
West, I think there's nobody. There's nobody in the West that's going to be tanking.
The only team that I give a chance at this, if Dame gets traded.
Yeah, Portland could be tanking.
Portland is tanking hard. Everyone
although I don't know that they'd be necessarily tanking, they would just be young, right? They wouldn't necessarily be, hey, we're turning this thing over. Because if they trade Dame, they've basically then at that point, they've already turned the roster over. Like Scoot is the guy, right? Scoot's the next guy. Yep. At least that's what you're hoping. If you trade Dame, the thought process is we already have our next.
Currently saying that. Like they had a meeting yesterday, and they said we're committed to building around Dame. Now, whether that's just blah blah speak or what, but I mean, I just don't see.
Can they do anything? Can they do anything in your mind around if you're going to keep Dame? Is there anything that they could do to move the needle to be able to get the level of player that they would need to get in there to be able to even be? Competitive at the top of the conference. I don't either.
I mean,
because like I like Simons, but Simons and you're going to trade Simons and what Nurkic? Like Nurkic is like a contract that nobody wants. I guess they might have some future draft picks that they could trade out, but I just don't think you're getting the level of player. Now, could you? I think the one thing that's been tossed around, and I don't know if I saw it on one of the ESPN things, but to me, if the Clippers decided they wanted to get rid of Paul George, let's say, right?
Paul George is a rumor, Mike, that he wants to go.
So if you could put Scoot, Lillard, re-sign Jeremy Grant, Paul George, get a bargain basement center, is that, and then whatever they have coming off the bench, is that enough to make Portland a contender? I mean, I guess you could say if Paul George is healthy and playing at the level that he played at when he was at his best, maybe.
What if
maybe
you could,
slide up into the upper half of the Western Conference? I don't think there's much they can do.
What if you could trade Isaac Okoro, Imani Bates, Jared Allen for Paul George? Would you do it if you're the Cavs?
Tell me the trade again.
Okoro, Allen, okay. Imani Bates, the guy we drafted.
No, I know who he is.
Would you trade that for Paul George? I say yes.
The only thing that gives me pause is that then you have to go out because we were already woefully thin on bigs. So I'm not sure I want Mobley playing.
What if you get Isaiah Hartenstein back with that too?
Well, he's in New York, so I don't know.
Who's there? Like
Hassan Whiteside?
Well, yeah. What about Whiteside?
No. You'd go out to the free agent market and just pick up a bargain basement guy somewhere that could play some minutes at center. You can't go into next season with Mobley as the lone big. So the question becomes. One, can Paul George stay healthy, right? The healthy version of Paul George is clearly a superior player to any of those three players that you're dealing out. However, you have, 4 years with the Clippers where his ability to stay healthy and stay on the floor has been, let's say, challenging at best. So I don't know. I think I'd probably do it. But that seems like a win the championship now move. And I'm not sure that even if Paul George plays 82 games at the peak of what Paul George can be, I don't know still that the Cavs are necessarily a championship team. But it's intriguing because I don't know. After watching Jared Allen in the playoffs, Okoro, I think his destiny is to be a seventh or eighth man playing 18 minutes on a good team. I just don't think you could play Isaac Okoro as a starter with the offensive liabilities that he has as a shooter and as a scorer. I don't see it. If he hasn't developed it or shown at least a little bit of sign to this point, it's hard to believe he's going to develop anything. And then Imani Bates, I mean, maybe when he's 14 and everybody thought he was going to be the presumptive number one pick in his draft class, and obviously things have gone south for him. Clearly there's talent there. And I guess if you're Portland and you rebuild there, I'm sorry, if you're the Clippers and you're, you know, take a chance on a guy that maybe becomes his Paul George's replacement at some point, I don't know. I guess if I'm the Cavs, I guess I do it, but I'm really then sort of accelerating my timeline. It still comes down to Mobley, right? The Cavs whole thing comes down to Mobley.
Yep. Okay, well, Mike, let me just play you the clip. So okay. Brian Windhorst today appeared on ESPN Cleveland.
Okay.
And this is what he said. It's a 23-second clip, so just listen. Here we go.
Okay. All right, I'm ready.
They don't have a terrific feel for what the Cavs are doing. They've kept their information pretty tight. I have some speculation. There's a couple of outlandish stuff that I'm not going to say right now because I'd get in trouble. I wish I could tell you more, and I know I shouldn't tease you, but there's one thing out there that I heard that just look on social media in this last week and see what you see and you know, start going from there.
So that's what Brian Windhorst said today, Mike. I've heard some outlandish things about the Cavs and their free agency. Now, this is the Brian Windhorst who last year did this and became a meme, as in he knew about the it wasn't the Mitchell trade. It was what trade was it that he knew about?
Gobert, right?
Gobert. Yeah. Something doesn't seem to be adding up, and him to come out and say this means that he has like some intel. Now, there's been lots of speculation today, Mike. There's been lots of speculation. Someone has even gone as far as saying LeBron's coming back. I'm not going there. And then we had people who were saying that...
Well, LeBron can't come back for a year anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Well, he's not coming back for a year. No, someone's breadcrumbs. The breadcrumbs, Mike. You're the breadcrumbs.
Okay.
Because Windhorst said, look on social media.
Okay.
LeBron's unhappy that the Lakers aren't active in doing anything. LeBron's unhappy with Anthony Davis and is willing to trade Anthony Davis away if they can get a better player. LeBron recently demolished his home in L.A. and doesn't have anywhere to live for the next year in L.A.
What? Because
you didn't hear this?
No.
He bought this house that was built in the 1920s, 1930s, and it was that huge mansion. He ripped it completely out. It's gone. And he's remodeling. He doesn't have his mansion. He's living in some upscale apartment in L.A. instead of being in a big house.
All right.
There's recently been refurbishment on his house in Bath. Okay, this is the stuff that was coming on social media. Okay, but the house thing in L.A. is legit. Like, his house is completely gone. This was reported last week. So, and you must be really
you got to be excited, man.
So
you got to be thrilled. He's coming back.
Listen, I told you. No. I don't think there's any way because of Bronny playing for USC. I just don't. I don't see it. I just don't see him going away from where Bronny's at. Okay.
What's he going to do? Demand a trade to Cleveland?
Mike, I'm telling you, I don't see it. This is what social media stuff was talking about. No, I think. But the Paul George thing has been floating around today. That's why I asked it. As a potential trade. There's also was rumor of there was a picture yesterday. Did you see the picture of who Darius was sitting with?
Yeah, I did see that with Miles Bridges.
And someone said, please don't. We already have a hard enough time with rooting for Deshaun Watson.
I saw that. But all right, if you divorce Miles Bridges from the situation, which I know obviously you can't, the biggest position of need is what Miles Bridges does, right? The time before he got into trouble, he was really developing as a shooter. He was a guy who's physical, not necessarily a great defender, but definitely on the offensive end of the floor, he would be a huge upgrade over anything they've been able to throw on the floor in a long time. And I guess you kind of got to hold your nose if you're going to sign him, but that's never stopped any professional sports teams before. And to be honest, it doesn't stop fan bases from rooting for these guys. So,
yeah,
that would be an interesting one. It would be interesting on a lot of levels. From a basketball standpoint, it would be a clear plus and upgrade if they could figure out a way to make that happen. But you'd have to deal with the fallout, which again would probably last a week, and then it would come up occasionally here and there, and whatever. Be easy to ignore, I think.
So I mean, I don't know, like who are the free agents, Mike? With the mid level,
who are the free agents?
Who of the free agents would you think the Cavs legitimately?
Who should they go after?
Yeah. I mean, who can they afford?
I mean, you're really looking at just sort of bargain basement type guys. I mean, you're not looking at anybody that you can really go after that's going to be somebody that's going to really move the needle. I got to find the list of
I saw Derek Jones Jr. name floating. Would he excite you?
No. Who else? I saw a list of like three or four names that somebody had thrown out there. There you go. And then who else was on that list? There was
Kendrick
like
Nunn?
One or two. Yeah. I mean, none of those names.
Josh Richardson?
Yeah. So, okay. The theory of any of those guys, right? You say, wow, we get the best version of them and they can really help us. The reality is I don't see any of those guys being a guy who is going to play or would play major minutes for the Cavs in a playoff rotation. Maybe because the Cavs playoff rotation was sort of anemic this year, maybe they do play if they were to come to Cleveland, but none of those names excite me in any way, shape, or form, or I don't think make the Cavs materially better. And that's really the problem with this team, right? Is what do you do? I guess, like we talked about, Jared Allen is the one piece that you could consider moving. He's on a reasonable contract. He's young. He's a guy that has value around the league. The question is, again, how much value does he have? And the Cavs just don't have really anything else that they can throw into a trade. I mean, you're looking at, okay, yeah, you could toss somebody a Monty Bates, and I guess you could toss him a Kuro or Dean Wade or one of these guys, but that's not moving the needle to getting you a guy that is really going to make a difference, unless you're willing to take a chance on somebody like Paul George, who's been hurt for four seasons, it seems like, and has been really unavailable in all the most important moments in the Clippers franchise during that time. So I'm sure the Cavs are talking. I'm sure that they are, I don't know if offering Jared Allen, but I'm sure in conversations they're talking about, hey, Jared Allen is available for the right type of package. I can't imagine that there's any way, shape, or form that Garland, Mitchell, or Mobley would even be discussed as far as a trade in some way. I still worry about the small backcourt in the long term, that you kind of got to figure out, hey, how do we make this work with two smaller guards? And so I think you really do need somebody who can play on the wing with size that can both be an offensive and defensive player. And good luck, because that's what every team in the league is looking for. So to be able to find one of those guys on the scrap heap or in the bargain bin is pretty unlikely for the Cavs, I would have to guess.
Yeah. Okay, so your take on Imani Bates, like, does he have potential? Like, do you think he has potential? Or do you think he's too much of a project and maybe, I don't want to say problem child, but he's got a lot of baggage.
He's got a lot of baggage. I think, look.
Is he our new Kevin Porter Jr. is my question. Like, is he going to have flashes where
that scenario is much more likely of an outcome than the outcome where he turns into
a food item at an assistant coach.
Well, so here's the thing, right? Is clearly, if you want to go back and that Sports Illustrated article that was written about him came out when he was 14, maybe, and basically that article painted him as the next LeBron, a surefire guy that was going to be potentially a number one pick in an NBA draft. And so I think the thing when you look at, right, it's always, I think Simmons has said this, that you look at guys who had a pedigree in high school and maybe they didn't have as great of a college career or maybe as great of a freshman season as you might have wanted them to, but you go back and you look and say, okay, this guy was rated number one in his class or he was number two in his class or whatever it was. And those are guys that maybe if you get them in the right environment, that there still has to be, there's talent there. Like, that many people didn't evaluate this guy as being a great player because he didn't have talent. So I think Imani Bates has talent. The question just becomes, as with any guy, right, what kind of a guy he is, what kind of work ethic does he have, what kind of teammate is he going to be, is he going to be a guy who's going to take his career seriously and put in the work and the time and the discipline that's necessary to get where he wants to go, or is he just going to be a guy that sort of tries to cruise on his talent? Now, you would hope that where he is now as a second round pick out of Eastern Michigan is different from where he was 2 years ago when he was a top recruit at Memphis. Clearly, there's been a sort of a humbling, so to speak, of kind of where he is in the hierarchy. But, I don't know. Again, to me, the more likely outcome is that he's a guy who tantalizes you occasionally in garbage time with, wow, look at that. Look what this guy can do. But when push comes to shove, he's probably not going to be a guy that's going to live up to his potential just based on what he is. Now, clearly, as a Cavs fan and just as a human being, you're rooting for a guy who has that kind of talent to be able to settle down and figure it out. But I think history would probably tell you that that's pretty unlikely.
Yeah. I'd like to think best thoughts for him, but I just – and here's the thing. I think if he's got – I really think Mitchell's a good leader. I think Mitchell will do a good job, like, guiding him in the right direction. Because I think Mitchell, at least to me – seems like a good dude. Seems like he's got his head on straight. Seems like, you know, he's
modest. Seems like the Cavs have a good culture, right? Yeah, it seems like they have a good culture. Like, there.
Listen, he's, you know, Mitchell seeing courtside the last two nights ago at New York Liberty game. Like, he's supporting WNBA. He's always doing things. He was at the, did you see him hitting the home runs at the, he did like the home run derby with with Greg Newsom's, had like a softball charity thing. Greg Newsom, you know.
Is that baseball?
No, you know who Greg Newsom is? Cornerback for the Browns. Yeah, cornerback for the Browns. Okay. They had a charity thing and
they were playing baseball though?
They were playing, it was like a home run derby and softball, and they had a
home run. They used bats and gloves in that game?
Yeah.
Bats and gloves? Okay.
Yeah.
I think I've seen that before.
But Mitchell won the home run derby and called himself Spider Ohtani.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah.
I know Ohtani.
Yeah. Well, hey, Ohtani tonight, Mike, two homers and 10 strikeouts as a pitcher. That's a fun fact.
That's pretty good. That dude, it's too bad baseball's not popular anymore, because that dude would be off the charts. I mean, really would. What he's doing, when I think about what he's doing on the baseball field, and I think about what that would have been like when I was 10 years old in 1980, if he were doing that, I mean, it's crazy that basically he's completely he's completely unknown to the youth of America. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. That is a true statement. Sorry. All right. There's our baseball sidebar conversation.
So baseball analysis.
Other than that, I think he's got a chance. Imani Pick's got a chance to get back on what we were talking about. Do I think it's a for sure thing? No, I don't. Do I feel strangely more confident in him being like possibly productive in comparison to some of the other guys we've picked in recent years? I think he has a chance. Do I think it's a for sure thing? No, but do I weirdly feel more positive about the pick? I know, and getting him where we got him, we have to understand that gets factored in as well. Do I feel better about picking him than I did when the Cavs picked up Coral? Oddly, I think yes.
You think that the number 49 pick in the second round, you feel more confident that he's going to be a good player?
Well, no, I'm saying getting him where we got him and picking Okoro where we picked Okoro, I don't necessarily think that.
So you feel more confident that you're going to get better relative to their draft slot. You feel like Imani Bates is more likely to outplay his more raw production or more production compared to the average number 49 slot?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so he's going to outperform his draft position is what you're saying.
Here's a bold prediction. I think he's going to be the best player in the second round of the draft by the time his career is over.
All right. Okay. Man, if that happens, that would be quite an accomplishment for him and for the Cavs. And look, clearly there's talent there, so what you're betting on, and look, most of the time it's a losing bet, but what you're betting on is that you get the guy into your environment, you get him into your building, and you work with them both on the basketball floor, off the basketball floor, and you hope that he turns into a guy who can at least tap into the majority of his potential. And if he does that, he's got a chance. Look, anybody who's a small forward with a pulse should want to be in Cleveland, because there's a tremendous opportunity there to be able to get minutes and play, because that position last year, in particular in the playoffs, is just a black hole screaming out for somebody to fill it. And if the Cavs could fill it with somebody who actually was good, and look, even if Imani Bates is good, the chances that he's going to be good enough to contribute as a playoff player in his first season is highly unlikely. It's much more likely that you're talking 2, 3, 4 years down the road that this guy develops into the type of player that you're kind of envisioning. It's highly unlikely that a second round rookie is going to, if the Cavs play the Knicks next season in the playoffs, that he's going to be the guy that swings the series and, oh, now all of a sudden the Cavs are going to win because of Imani Bates. But look, it's fun to speculate. I think part of what's interesting about Imani Bates is you and I have heard of him, so we could go through the second round of the draft. And I mean, I don't even know how many guys I could name in the second round of the draft that I've actually seen play 1 minute of basketball. So at least Imani Bates I've heard of and known about. And so I think that's part of the intrigue with them, is that, hey, here's a guy we heard about that we drafted in the second round. So maybe there's a chance that he's good. I hope he is, but again, I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the second round, Mike. I've heard of Jordan Walsh.
We could do the second round shuffle here.
I've heard of Keontae Johnson.
Okay.
He's the guy who had the heart thing for Florida State.
Okay. All right. I'm just trying to buzz through the names here. I've only had the first initial and the last name, and there's not too many of them I could tell you who they are, which isn't a good thing, but it is what it is.
Yeah. All right. I don't have anything else on that. We don't need to sit here. Anything else, Mike? I mean,
all right. Does Dame get traded? Bottom line, does he get traded?
No, I think he gets traded. It's midseason.
Yeah, I think it's a no. I think he'd go midseason.
If they're not doing well, he's gone.
Well, and then you find out what – either way, right? You find out what Scoot is, and maybe Scoot is great, and that says to Dame, hey, I want to stay. Maybe Scoot is great, and that says to the Trailblazers, hey, let's deal Dame, get a bunch of
– the NBA.
Let's get a bunch of pieces in here, and now we build around Scoot. Maybe Scoot's terrible, and then Dame demands out. Who knows? There's a lot of different ways you can go, but I think there's more likely to be a bigger market for him midseason than there is right now. I just think that right now there's just not a lot of teams that can make trades for him because of the salary matching and everything else that has to go into it. I think there's probably going to be more teams that would jump into the fray midseason than there will be now. But I don't know. I guess it remains to be seen. I think he's going to be on the Trailblazers come training camp time in the fall.
All right, and then there's one more piece of news, Mike. Did you hear the free agent signing today?
The free agent signing today.
Ryan Seacrest is replacing Pat Sajak on Wheel of Fortune next year.
Oh, really? All right. Is Vanna White still on?
She is still on.
She is? All right. There you go. When was the last time you watched Wheel of Fortune?
Well, Mike, I have some sad news for you. I cut the
today?
Cord. I cut the cord. I don't have
it.
I got rid of YouTube TV. I'm the only one in the family that's been watching it consistently. And I was done paying $75 a month for it. YouTube TV, lower your prices. Okay? I liked everything about you when I first got you. You got too expensive. So now I'm just watching things on Netflix, and I don't know. I guess I'm putting this out of the podcast here. I still use my dad's password for, sports stuff, but that's about it.
Okay.
But, I cut the cord. I think the last time I watched Wheel of Fortune, I liked when they did the celebrity Wheel of Fortune, and I enjoyed watching that because they are really dumb. I enjoyed watching
compared to normal game show contestants.
And I
right?
will say, I TikTok every once in a while, I get a good what are these people doing on Wheel of Fortune? Like funny ones, like there's I get Family Feud more than anything on the TikTok, but I get Wheel of Fortune ones every once in a while. I was a religious Jeopardy guy, and I once Trebek died. I was out, pretty much.
All right. Well, there you go. So I don't remember the last time I watched Wheel of Fortune. I may have accidentally seen it like at my in-laws' house 20 years ago. But other than that,
I used to watch Wheel of Fortune all the time. Mike, did you ever watch Judge Judy? Did you ever watch Judge Judy in your life?
I mean, I'm sure. I highly doubt I ever sat through an entire episode of Judge Judy on purpose.
I'm a huge Judge Judy fan. Mike.
Judge Judy has been on a TV somewhere in my vicinity, but I don't think I've ever watched
episode. I love Judge Judy. She just makes me.
Okay, we'll see. There you go. I can understand cutting the cord. I only have it for sports, and I don't think anybody else really cares or would watch it. We would just whatever go with.
Yeah, here's the rub though. Like, I got to figure out. There's got to be a way for me to get like I got to get like an antenna or something because I got to be able to watch my stuff like, and that's gonna be the
problem. You got to be able to watch. Yeah, Survivor. You got to be able to watch Browns games, right?
I'll go over my dad's and watch the Browns games all the time. So we watch them together. We yell at the TV together, and I bring my kids along and they play while we're watching, and then they're like, "Oh, the Browns are losing again," and I'm like, "Yes, thank you guys, thank you." So I'm not worried about the Browns. And you can actually watch the Browns on the NFL app. You don't have to log in. You can watch it on the NFL app, the local game, whatever it's being shown on local, you can watch it on the NFL app. So I'm not worried about the Browns games. I'm worried about Survivor. I'm worried about Big Brother, and I'm worried about, like those kinds of shows that I watch. And I know you don't watch, and you watch Survivor, but
Survivor's the only show that I watch. That's the only TV show I watch. I don't have anything else that's on my docket. So I'm just
gonna watch Netflix. I have Netflix. I have Disney Plus, and that'll get me through it.
All right. Well, you got plenty of stuff to watch. You can scroll through it a million times and check out all the different things they have. That's what we do at our house. Then people argue, and then whatever comes on, they all watch it when it comes on. So it doesn't matter who wins the battle. As soon as the show starts, everybody's transfixed.
I'm excited. Mike, did you see they're releasing, I think it's tomorrow, the American Gladiators documentary. I'm going to watch that.
Oh, really?
Did you watch American Gladiators?
I watched some Gladiators back in the day. I was not a religious American Gladiators person, but I watched it some.
So I'm going to watch that. I'm excited to watch that.
All right, there you go. Yeah. Trying to carve out any time to watch any of this stuff is tough. So anyway, all right. I don't think there's anything else really right now that we need to hit on. We will continue to keep our eyes on the rumor mill and what actually comes down in free agency as we move forward here.
And if the Mike, I'm going to pledge to you, if the Cavs do something outlandish, as Brian Winters says, I will go sit in my car and we will podcast from my car.
All right. Sounds like a plan. We'll make it happen. I'll be here on our normal Tuesday night/Wednesday morning, but you will not. And then I'll be in Chicago at a time when you're returning home for some AAU. So we'll try to make it happen. Maybe if something happens that's big, but not too big, and I'll do a little Han Solo, or maybe who knows? We'll just have to wait and see. Maybe
that's the Cavs will make a move. For you guys at home. It's a Star
that
Wars
is,
reference.
That is. How old is Harrison Ford now?
He's Indy, baby. I don't know. He's back. That's it. He's back. He's playing Indy.
He's back as Indy. You going to go see that movie?
When I get back from Maine, we'll go with my dad. Listen, listeners out there, you go to Applebee's. You spend $35 at Applebee's with your family, which if you have a family of six like myself, it's very easy to spend $35 at Applebee's or any restaurant for that matter. You get a free ticket to Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Really?
There you go. Yeah.
How about that? Insider tip from the Hoopheads pod.
If you spend $70, and it does include alcohol, I did not have alcohol, but it does include alcohol. If you spend $70, you can get two free tickets. We were at 58, and if I would have, I was like, I probably could have spent $12 more, and it would have been cheaper 58? Than a movie.
What are your kids eating, man? What do they eat? $58. How are you getting out with six people at Applebee's for $58?
Three kids' meals. Abby just pinches off their food. Okay.
Okay.
We had half price appetizers, two of them. And then Molly and I got the 2 for $20, which comes with an additional appetizer and then two entrees. And then we drink water. We don't drink pop.
Look at you, man. How about that? That's impressive, man. You ever heard of that show, Extreme Cheapskates?
Oh, the Extreme Couponing?
That could be you, man. Getting under $60 at Applebee's with a family of six. That's impressive, man. You might have to qualify. You should send in a tape.
I don't think. Listen, we didn't go. It was for Jake's half birthday because we celebrate half birthdays over here. And
okay, there you go.
We didn't have half birthday, man.
We just happened
to be half price. It would have been cheaper because if we wouldn't have had half price appetizers, we probably wouldn't have gotten the extra appetizers. But because they were half price, I was like, oh, it's half birthday. Let's get some half price appetizers. We've really gone off the rails the last 10 minutes.
We're completely gone. All right, I think it's time for us to end. We can just continue the conversation after we finish this so no one else has to listen to it. All right, thanks for checking out this NBA edition of the Hoopheads Pod. If anything exciting happens with the Cleveland Cavaliers, we will probably jump on for an emergency pod. Otherwise, we will catch you sometime next week in some form. Who knows?
Somewhere in
the neighborhood. In the meantime, be sure to check out all of our regularly scheduled
Applebee's logo, by the way.
Yes, that is. You're 100% right. So we had Austin Newton from Berea College go out yesterday, and then coming up at the end of the week, we have Jacob Flegel, assistant men's basketball coach at Emory. So check those two out for this week. And otherwise, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.